Lori Walsh. On December 17th, 2016, our next guest performed with 3,000 young musicians and singers from the Sioux Falls School District. That event was recorded, and after several months of editing, mixing, and mastering, Electrifying Your Symphony Live in Sioux Falls premieres Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central on SDPB-TV. Mark Wood is a Juilliard-trained violinist, an Emmy-winning composer, an original member of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and a ferocious performer and a rock star. Mark Wood, welcome. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And also joining us in the studios in Sioux Falls, powerhouse vocalist Laura Kay. As a recording artist and session vocalist, Laura has worked with just a long list of people, including James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Lenny Kravitz. She also writes, records, and performs as a solo artist, and she's married to Mark. Laura, welcome. Thanks for being here.
So happy to be here.
All right, Mark, let's start with electrifying this program. Tell me a little bit about what folks can expect to see on Sunday night.
We did something that is earth-shattering, is life-changing, is a spectacle that we've never seen before. We may have broken a world's record. Can you imagine seeing on stage 3,000 young musicians and our band? I can't even imagine what that looks like. It sounds chaotic to me. And it was at certain points, but what was really great is that once we settled down and we played music together, it was glorious and it was heaven. Yeah. So that was that experience that you're going to witness seeing something that prior to that concert, a couple of days before the concert, we really had no idea. Until we got to the arena, and of course, as you remember, we had a snow scare with the weather where the concert was going to be canceled. So a full year of preparation for this concert, and the night before, they say, well, we're not sure it's going to happen. Oh, no, are you kidding me?
Yeah, they were predicting 30 below zero.
And it did happen.
It did happen, and that up until that morning, we weren't sure. And so we were very grateful that every single person showed up that night, and it was magnificent.
And inside it was hot. It was sizzling on the inside.
Sizzling.
You got to get the instruments in, and they just shatter in that kind of cold weather. But so tell me, Mark, about this audacious idea in the first place, because it's part of an overall program of really revitalizing music education in America.
After probably 18 years of us doing Electrify Your Strings and Electrify Your Symphony, Electrify Your Music, engaging choirs, bands, and orchestras, we have found a way to pull this off. Pull off the impossible by wrangling young people, focusing them in not just a rehearsal setting of learning, but a performance setting. So for 17 years, we've been working around the world with young musicians to inspire them and motivate them and make sure that they understand that music is a vehicle to travel inside their imagination, not just a saw or to sing a note. It's all about engaging a very, very creative environment. And we found such success in that. Years and years of performing with 1,000 here, 1,500 there. Last 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, before we did the concert, James Weaver was the head of the music department in Sioux Falls. And we did a small program, and James was like, let's do something at the arena, Mark. And I was like, definitely. How many kids can we get? Oh, we can maybe a couple thousand. I said, definitely, let's do it. As it got closer, it became 3,000. Mark, you sure we can do it? Oh, yeah, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. A day before, it's like, I think we're doing it. We arrive at the show. I know where we can put them. We're literally, you know, at this moment, we're creatively figuring out at the time of before the concert, where the choir goes, where the orchestra goes, where the band goes. And it fell right into place. It was amazing.
I want to go back a little bit and talk about sort of your beginnings and just the journey that you've had, because it starts out with you and a viola at Juilliard and sort of seeing that you're in a different box than you want to be in. And how do you sort of break that box open and say, I want to be here. I want this skill. I want this technique. I want to be able to do, but I want to, there's more to it for me than this. I don't quite fit here, but I'm not going to walk away from it.
Traditional education, we're talking about. Traditional education is set up not for the individual, it's by the group, which is fine. And if you can understand that and absorb and learn what you need to learn, the action and the activity doesn't really exist in the classroom. It exists in the real world. When you go out on stage and say, oh, now I know why I need my bow arm and for me to play in tune and to sing in tune. Now I get that because I learned that in the classroom. What we need to reintroduce into the classroom is the performance aspect. Once we have the technique, that doesn't make us a musician. What makes us as a musician? What makes us as an artist? What makes us and defines us? So going to Juilliard, the person that changed my life was a man named Leonard Bernstein. And for to be mentored by him for a summer at Tanglewood, which is a music festival in Boston or Massachusetts, that was life-changing. If you can write West Side Story and conduct Mahler and Beethoven, I'm hanging out with you. How are you doing that and recognizing jazz, recognizing rock, recognizing the Beatles, and recognizing Beethoven? That is that's how I figured out and how I absorb music. So with education, it's tricky because we don't want to isolate our musicians. And that's really one of the challenges that we have. Do we isolate you, put you in a practice room for 10 hours a day, and then only let you out when we give you permission? Do you think John Lennon would allow that? Do you think Jimi Hendrix would Miles Davis accept that? Absolutely not. They would say, get out of my way. I need to pursue the things that we imagine in our minds but have never happened. And that's what I think artists, the definition of art is this has never happened before. This brush stroke, this color, this dance movement, this musical moment has never occurred before. That's our pursuit and that's our mission of teaching young musicians. Pursue what has never been done.
The definition of art is this has never happened before. I'm writing that down. Laura, tell me about your musical journey and how it sort of intersects with this notion of, having the technique and learning what needs to be learned, but then figuring out how to use your voice in a way that feels like, yeah, this is my voice. This is what I want to say.
My journey was very different than Mark's. While Mark had a formal traditional background, which he transcended, thankfully. Thank you for transcending that formal traditional background. I'm purely self-taught. I started singing because as a form of music therapy, almost. My dad passed away when I was young, and my household was very difficult as I was growing up, and I found that the louder I sang, the better I felt. And it always became something that I could express my deepest, darkest, happiest, lightest, every emotion, every spectrum of everything in the universe I could express through my voice, as long as I gave myself permission to do so freely and openly, which I didn't know how to do anything else. Mm. With every choir I work with, I try to convey that sense of permission, of allowing themselves as young singers to access that part that they're afraid to show the world. Well, you can show the world by singing. You can show the world by emoting, by getting away, as Mark said, from the dots on the page, from the music on the page, and connecting more of on an emotional level with everything that you do. It's always informed my journey as a vocalist, and I try to convey that to every young singer that I work with.
I want to talk more about this idea of emotion, and you touched on it vocally, and I want to touch on it with an instrument in your hand, and you mentioned Jimi Hendrix, Mark, and you've been compared to him in the sense of this relationship that Jimi Hendrix had with his guitar, which includes lighting it on fire, to the relationship you have with this instrument that you really invented. So tell us a little bit first about the violin itself that you have created, the Viper, and then let's talk a little bit about how teaching these kids that. Because I mentioned, in the cold weather, those instruments just shatter. My daughter plays the cello. So a lot of times, the scariest thing that can happen is that something bad will happen to that instrument because of how we teach them, like, oh, don't set it down. Don't step on it. And here you are, dancing, moving with it in a way that nobody'd really seen before. So talk a little bit about the Viper and a relationship with an instrument that a classic or that a string musician can have.
Yeah, especially a bowed stringed instrument, which is one of the things I'm fascinated with for my entire life, is why is that instrument so critical in my expression? Because traditionally, you're either a fiddler, which I'm not, or you're doing classical music, which I grew up with, and there was no room for the rock and roll in me, because I was really a rockhead, Beatles, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, and jazz, but the rock stuff was really great. But the instrument, yeah, I think that's really important. Every time I talk to students, the instrument is a vehicle to travel. It's that simple. And my Viper is quite a vehicle. It has seven strings. It's self-supporting, so it floats, which I invented and patented a process that you're not holding it with a chin rest shoulder pad the traditional way, which kids still need to learn for acoustic instruments. But the electric world, I was like, man, I'm free to do whatever I want. There's no rules. In the acoustic world, there are rules, because the instrument will not play properly if it's not the box and the construction of it. But with electric, I can make something look really strange. And my first couple of inventions, as you can see on my website, are everything from a violin with a barrel at the end of it to shoot bottle rockets out of it, a double neck violin, an instrument that was configured out of my hand and arm, because I grew up in a wood shop, because my father's side were all woodworkers and my father's a painter. So I watched them, and I had no clue how to build an instrument, but I just went in there. But back to Jimi Hendrix, watching the guitar players of the 60s and 70s, that's what I want to do. So then, Mark, why don't you just play guitar? I said, I'm a viola player. I'm not a guitar. I don't need to play guitar. I play viola. Everybody needs a viola player, right? And I was a bowed string. All my brothers are string players. My mother's a musician. So it was deeply in my DNA to use a bowed instrument. And then I discovered that the bow was the perfect mechanism and tool for me to express myself. Because guitar, if you remember, is a percussion instrument. You pluck it, the string dies. Now, Jimi Hendrix turned his amplifier up not to 10, but to 11 to create sustain, which we have with the bow already. So I was listening to Hendrix and Clapton and Jeff Beck. Oh, they're trying to elongate that note, because if an acoustic instrument, it will die out within seconds. But with an amp turned up to full blast, I mean, deafeningly level Hendrix played at, to get that feedback, to get that long legato slurred thing that string players have been playing for hundreds of years, it's like, man, I can do that with my bow. Ah, but I can't use four strings. I built the first five string. Then I built the first six string. And then I built my seven string. And that was like, oh, now I got a perfect partner to my guitar player cousin. They're sort of cousins to string players. So it really, that was the turning point.
Laura, what does this relationship to an instrument look like when the instrument is your voice?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, first of all, what I want to interject is that there's a synergy between the violin and the voice that is so special, it almost defies description. But the way that Mark can emote through his playing, we have so many conversations on stage. We do a duel in front of one of our songs where Mark will play something and it's a call and response thing, but it's mimicking the energy and the emotion from vocally into an instrument that Mark is a master at doing.
But you usually win every time.
I do usually win every time, but I can't sing as fast as you can play. You can definitely play faster than I can. But to convey emotion through singing is just, well, to me, it's the most natural thing ever.
Well, every great musician, Miles Davis, yeah. John Coltrane, Hendrix, all were imitating the voice.
Right. Well, you have to have a connection with the music that you're performing. So again, when I work with choirs, I have exercises where don't just sing the words, sing the story. And I give them tools of how to connect with the story of everything that they're singing, even if it's not in a language that, you know, some schools bring me in to do workshops where they're working on pieces that are in Italian or in other languages. I don't know what that means. The kids don't know what it means. But I tell them to think about the sound of the notes. What does the sound make you feel like, regardless of what it actually means? What does it make you feel like? And then sing with that feeling. Mm. And it's very special and wonderful.
I'm going to play a little excerpt from, again, this concert, which you can see, Electrify Your Symphony live in Sioux Falls. And it's a little bit of a song called This Christmas Day. Symphony live in Sioux Falls. It premieres Sunday night at 8 Central on SDPB TV. Mark Wood and Laura Kay, the beautiful voice of Laura Kay there.
Oh, thank you.
Singing so strong. And before I let you go, you know, this is radio, but I feel compelled to describe to our listeners a little bit about what's happening in the studio. And that's that every time we ask Mark a question, he answers with his hands and his entire body. and you know, I wish you could see just really, you know, the bowing and the physicality that is part of how, and this is us, and Laura, you as well, just immediately invite me into the conversation here in this room and in front of 3,000 kids or in front of a packed orchestra classroom or choir chorus classroom. That must be so inviting to them too and freeing to them. So let's just close with a little bit about this. You know, some kids are going to come at this very naturally and they're going to be like, oh, thank goodness you arrived because this is who I am. And others are going to be like, who's the lady with the purple hair in front of the room? And I'm not really sure, am I an orchestra anymore? So how do you kind of help younger musicians sort of shake off their own reservations around their peers and around, you know, maybe what they think stringed music and vocal music should be?
That's the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, and critically important, because perception is, life is all about perception. And if a kid looks at somebody else who's a little different than they are and is uncomfortable by that, it's critically important that that's a perfect moment to learn. I may not be comfortable about doing what Laura does, and Laura's definitely not comfortable playing my Viper.
No.
But I have found who I am, and now that I found that, I am 100% that way. For a kid to see that, it's critical that they understand that that kid or me or the purple-haired lady is one example of expression. And if you are in the corner over there hiding from the world and not comfortable about expressing that, you have to work at that, because someday you will be asked to stand up and express yourself to a friend, a business associate, a possible future husband or wife. And if you present yourself in an incorrect way, you will never, ever reach your dreams. So presentation is everything. So you may not want purple hair, but have a red hair. Or, well, what about no hair? Or whatever. You know?
It's about celebrating the differences.
Yeah.
In all of us and our uniqueness. I walk into the room, the first question I ask is, how many people like my hair? You know, pretty much everybody raises their hands. And the ones who don't, I'm like, okay, you can leave. And then everybody laughs. And then it's a moment. It's like, I don't try to hide my differences. This is how I dress around the house. This is how I look. This is who I am. And it's taken me many years to become confident and comfortable in who I am and my own skin. And I'm still not 100%. People think that when you reach a certain age, you're like, oh, it's all good and fine. You're constantly evolving, constantly trying out new things, constantly putting on and taking off what works, what doesn't. Although I have had purple hair for many, many years, but the shades change. But I try to convey to these kids how important it is to celebrate their uniqueness. And in a school environment, it's very tough because we're all told, in school that you have to tread the narrow path and everybody has to fit into the same
cookie cutter
fit into the same box and be. So I walk in, it's like, I'm coming in here and giving you 100% freedom to be exactly who you are. And they gasp. And I say, when's the last time somebody ever came into your school and said that to you? And they go, never. It's like, well, are you going to take advantage of the next 2 to 3 days that we're here and show me who you are? Or are you going to hide? And my advice to you is show me who you are, because you cannot be you wrong.